about the growing season, weather implications for spring wheat bread making quality.
Right. Yeah, thank you. Okay, I'm going to just bring you up to speed here a little bit on what this is about. Now, you'll notice that the author's here from Canada. And a lot of what we have been focusing on, and I think with good reason, in results to climate change has been on productivity and feeding that growth in population we're expecting. Now, if any of you are familiar, though, in Canada, we do export a lot of grain, for considering the size of the population and the producing region. And a big deal for us is quality, for all of our crops, especially for wheat. And we wanted to have a look at what the climate change might mean in regards to quality, not just the total production. So this is a little bit convoluted how this got to this point. So I'll start with the authors. Dr. Harry Saperstein was involved initially in a study on growing season weather conditions impact on spring wheat quality. He's a cereal chemist, and he's the guy that knows about the biochemistry and all that of wheat. Andy Nadler is a former graduate student, provincial ag meteorologist for the province of Manitoba, who did a work on agroclimatic risk, and more recently, Manasseh M. Kabela has been working with me as a research associate. So this has kind of pulled together a number of different initiatives to try to address this. Starting with the wheat quality study that we did in the 2003 to 2006 time period, this was a fairly large project. One sub-project was to look at some intensively monitored plots that were scattered around the production area of Western Canada. And these were, like replicated wheat trials. We could follow six different genotypes, three replicates. They were large plots so that we could harvest them all individually to get not only their yield, but also their quality parameters. We could follow the phenology for each one. And over that four-year period, we had to eliminate some because of frost damage and other sorts of things. We ended up with 15 site years of data. And this was our intensive monitoring. So we had good weather monitoring that was done at these sites that we couldn't do in the broader study that was scattered out to more locations. Now, in that 15 site years, like 2003 in Western Canada was rather dry. We were kind of recovering from a drought that had been at its peak kind of in 2001 and 2. 2004 was a wet year. A cold year that we had to eliminate some of our sites because of frost damage. We had an early frost that year. 2005 was wet. 2006 was different again. So we had a very good range of climatic conditions that we encountered. In fact, we didn't actually inspect crops this way in 2005, but we felt like we could have because that was just the type of year that it was. So we had a good range, and we thought that based on that, we should be able to come up with some reasonable conclusions. And what we wanted to focus on was not the fact that, if we get an early frost, damages our quality, we knew that. If we get wet conditions after the harvest, the grades fall, we knew that. What we wanted to look at more was the actual higher grades of wheat that come in. Why do they sometimes vary? Why does grades 1 and 2 wheat sometimes vary in their bread-making quality? So that was the focus of the study. So what we did then, of course, each of these sites, we were able to monitor intensively, and we looked at the growing season. We could monitor when the crop went through its different phases. We wanted to break it down, and I'm not showing you all of the phases here. We wanted to look at conditions as they varied across different parts of the development of the wheat. We felt that, especially you'll notice that towards the end of the growing season, when the wheat was in that sensitive reproductive phase and filling phase, that changes in heat stress, water stress, that sort of thing, could very likely impact the biochemistry And it's not just the protein amount, but the protein quality that could be contributing to some of the variation that we saw. So that was our goal, was to look at that very closely. We had literally dozens of weather-based variables that we considered. Thermal time variables, heat stress variables. We looked at the moisture supply, of course, precipitation and soil moisture. But we also looked at moisture demand as calculated by a number of different methods, moisture stress. And we did it at each of these different phases and combinations of phases. So we had literally hundreds of variables to consider. And on Dr. Saperstein's side of things, he was also quite diligent. We went through over 20 different quality parameters. We had grain that we could look at, protein and test weight, 1,000 kernel weight. We had flour. We milled all these individual plots to look at flour yield and the ash content, color, falling number, the protein constituents, several different farinograph and mixograph parameters of the dough, the bread, you know, characteristics, mix time, and loaf volume. So we had a lot of different quality parameters. And we looked at each of them individually up against these hundreds of weather-based variables and say, where can we find relationships that might lead us to what is it about the weather that's causing some of this variation in quality? So that was the goal. And we had several graduate students who very dutifully worked their way through this. This is an example of like one table out of many, where, and this is, I put this one up here because this is just looking at a single variable, a single weather variable up against these different quality variables to say, okay, where are we seeing, you know, what stage of the growing season and what type of condition are actually most highly correlated. Now, this was only very early on in the study. We were kind of surprised we're getting a fair bit of the variance described by just single variables. So we were encouraged by that. We thought, well, okay, that's a good sign. Of course, this is difficult because in a growing season, you get quality at the end. But the conditions all through the growing season are cumulative. And so try to tease out the individual ones was a bit of a challenge. When we went to multiple regression and thing like that, we often had parameters spread throughout the entire growing season. Anyway, so we have a number of these models. We've published some of this work now. And so that was the first part of this. So now, I said, as a first cut to try and get at what we think could happen with climate change, let's take these models that we've worked so hard to develop, let's put them out in the current period to see how they relate to what we get generally across Western Canada, then move ourselves forward in time with some of the outputs from these GCMs like we just saw for the New York study and say, okay, feed that back into those models. How does that shift these quality parameters? So that was the goal. That was my objective. And we were dutifully working away on that particular thing when we submitted the abstract. However, ready, you're now ready for the however, are you? Okay. So this is what we did. We have we selected a number of stations across Western Canada where we had good quality control data. This is where Andy Nadler came in with his agroclimatic risk study. He had actually hundreds of stations. We wanted a complete weather record over this time period. This was the most recent that he had in his study. And these were sites that are kind of away from where we get urban heat islands and stuff. Believe it or not, even in Western Canada, we do have urban heat island effects occasionally. So we wanted to locate away from those. And at each of these sites now, we can model a seeding date because we had models for seeding date. We could obviously model phenological development because we had followed it in our intensive survey and developed models and tested them. And then, of course, we started to feed in some of these other models. Now, we looked, first of all, at grain protein and flour protein. And the reason for those is because we had a good measured standard that we could follow. Every year, the Canadian Grain Commission gets literally thousands of samples that are submitted by farmers that come in, and they analyze all of them for grain protein and flour protein, and they come up with an assessment of quality for those two parameters for Western Canada. And in fact, they publish it by the province. So we can have for province. And like I say, we were interested in number one and two. How do those things, how do they vary? So this was our standard. We could go from any given year and look at the mean value of for grain protein for by province and for all of Western Canada, and compare that to what we got when we took all these weather stations, you know, from each province and got a mean value from our models. And so what we got initially was a big mess. Didn't seem to work very well at all. Now, this is the entire data set, and this is just a simple single parameter. This is an evaporative demand. This is a grass reference evapotranspiration that it had a reasonable R-squared when we developed it, and it's from planting to enthesis during the vegetative stage of growth. But any year that had frost damage or wet weather conditions, that wasn't where this model came from. So the next step was to say, well, let's strip those years out and see what happens. Well, we did, and it didn't help. Didn't help at all. And so we went on and said, okay, well, let's try a three-parameter model. It was worse. Okay, let's try flour protein. Now, flour protein, we don't have provincial values, and we only have them for all of Western Canada. So let's try flour protein. No, it's not working. So along came my research associate, who said, I think we're going to have to take a different approach, and because this obviously isn't working. Now, why are we getting such poor outcomes? This is something that we really can't answer. Are small plots just not representative of the larger fields in Western Canada? That's probably one of them. I mean, you know, you hope that you've got something represented, maybe not. We know that we have in these model planting dates and phenological development stages, we know, like, we can get within a certain number of days, RMSE, but we can't model phenology perhaps as accurately as we need to. And because these are phenological stage dependent, that error may be compounding in some way in these models. Maybe we just didn't have enough weather stations. We kind of picked a number of weather stations that when we went forward in time and took our grid-based values, we'd have a similar number of points to work with. But maybe we didn't get a large enough number to actually depict what the range was in Western Canada. Not really sure. But obviously we had to step away from that. What we did was, and this was the shortest part of the study, to get some decent results. We went to Statistics Canada, who had data on hard red spring wheat yield by province starting in 91 to 2010. And you take those yields and you plot them out over time and you get a time trend. You get an increasing yield trend across that 20-year period in all provinces. If you also plot those grain proteins for the same time period, there is no trend. Now, of course, things go up and down year after year, but the trend was neutral for protein. So that's the credit to your plant breeders who are getting more yield per acre without losing protein. That's pretty good. Now, if you detrend the yields, you have to detrend them or this doesn't work, and you plot that against the yield here against your protein, and I'm just showing this is Western Canada, but you get the same for the provinces, you get this, what we knew all along, is that you get this inverse relationship between grain protein and yield. So we knew that. And we think that probably a better way to get at impacts on quality is to come in through the back door and look at yield. So we're back to yield again. Despite our efforts to go at it directly, this is the way we're going to go. And what my research associate has done, we've submitted this now. He suggested, and I really scratched my head when he said this, aquacrop, FAO aquacrop, okay? And he says, this is a good one because it's not only just your weather conditions, but your CO2 levels. And that crop will take that into account when you go forward. And he came out, we did actually both yield and soil moisture. Great results. So now what we have is the task of taking those weather stations. We're going to run aquacrop through them. We're going to see how it does for that time period. And based on that, then we can, like I say, come in through the back door and try to get at quality. So there we go, a lesson in humility. It doesn't always work when you first try it. So I'd like to acknowledge, because of all the different studies, there are a number of different players involved over the years to get us this far. In fact, I even missed one. Andy Nadler had the Manitoba Corn Growers give him some money when he did his study. So I'd like to acknowledge all these funding agencies and hopefully be able to deliver them a result that will be of some interest for future quality in not too long. Thanks for your attention.
It shows how sometimes we come... When we come where we don't want to go, it gets us to a new place.
It gets us to a new place, that's right. And then hopefully something better comes out of it as a result. So live and learn.
I was wondering, are you familiar with Dan Long's work? When he was at Montana looking at the nitrogen content in the soil and that relationship with protein, and that would be another...
That's another side to it. Interesting that when we did our protein study, we didn't find strong relationships with... And we figured that most of our cooperating farmers are probably... fertilizing at high rates, and so we weren't seeing an N effect, even though we expected one. So that didn't show up. But yeah, I am familiar with that. Thank you.
Any other questions from anybody?
Yeah.
It's more a general comment, but I mean, I'm part of the modeling group, and people always ask me how can you get our modeling quality.
Our model
yield, nothing but a model quality.
Yes.
This is why.
Good comment. Our farmers in Western Canada get paid for quality. Well, they do in the States, too.
Right.
It's not just your yield, but you get paid more for higher protein and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's a big deal. Absolutely.
Durum wheat stuff.
Yeah, exactly.